Senate will come to order. The senators indicate their presence by voting.
The roll shows 19 senators present this morning.
Reverend Art Knight of the United Methodist Church of Douglas will give the invocation.
Almighty God, at the beginning of another week of work for the Senate of the State of Alaska, we pause for a moment of reflection, perhaps mentally to draw a deep breath of preparation for what lies ahead. And at this moment, we think once more of voices. There are the voices of the people, those who elected these senators, most of whom simply want to be served well. There are the voices, some of them rather strident at times, of those who come before this body pressing very specific issues and desires. There are the voices of staff people and of the experts who come to provide knowledge and advice. But most of all, there is the inner voice. When all others have been heard, each senator must heed that voice deep within, which speaks of possible and impossible, of right and wrong, for these 20 are the ones chosen to decide. As they approach this fundamental duty, we ask your aid in their efforts to gain knowledge. We pray that you will help them to be wise and courageous, and that you will bless them as human beings. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Today's tank, the Pledge of Allegiance. Live your life.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal.
No objection, the prayer be spread on the journal. Let the record reflect under Sackett, President. Secretary, please certify the journal.
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the journals for the 26th, 27th, and 28th legislative days and Senate Supplement Number 49.
Mr. Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that journal and supplements as certified by the Senate Secretary be approved.
No objection. The guest for introduction, Senator Bob Ziegler.
Mr. President, we have a passel of luminaries from Ketchikan here today. Before I introduce them, I want to clear up a little misunderstanding. You all got an invitation in recent days by the Ketchikan legislative delegation. That's not these people. This is the Ketchikan delegation, and Representative Sun, Taylor, and I are not hosting the cocktail party tomorrow night. I want to make that clear. And they are David Crow, our borough manager, Pam Hjortaset, Ketchikan School Board, Sherry Davis, president of the Alaska Association of School Boards, Linda Zarek, assistant borough manager, Jim Swink, mayor of Saxman, and finally, but certainly not last, Ted Ferry, the mayor of Ketchikan.
Senator Jack Coggle.
Mr. President, it gives me great pleasure into introducing the people from the Copper River area. Like Senator Ziegler, we have a group of people here that are probably looking down the same avenues as good senator is, and I would like to introduce to you Billy Williams, who is the school board president of the Copper River area. He has with him two of his board members, C.D. McCurry. That's the gentleman there with the fine batch of whiskers, and Dave Bruno. And with them is their superintendent, who is very timid, Leland Dickman. Leland. Mr. President, over in the far gallery, if she's still there, a teacher from the Tok area, who's also here with a student from the Tok area, and I understand she's over in the house, but I'd like to introduce to the Senate Ruth Ann Hoare, who is over there in the far gallery. Ruth?
Senator Fred Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have seven students here from the Southwest Regional School District that I would like to introduce at this time. From Neustoyuk, we have Moxie Andro Jr., Guy Bond. From Togiak, Jack Connolly, and also from Togiak, Brian Abraham, Leavelock, Anise Dobkins, and from Manicotok, Katrina Bryan, and Teresa Toyakuk. Thank you.
Senator Ferguson?
I have some students here from the Nome School District visiting the Capitol. They are Michelle Galineau, Nicole Johnson, and Nathaniel Hall. Welcome to the Senate.
Senator John Sackett?
Mr. President, from Tyonek, as a part of the close-up students, I have a guest here, Walter Starkloff. Welcome.
Senator Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. President. Today I also have, as along with Senator Katula, some students with close-up. And the first student that I'm going to introduce is someone else that you're going to honor today in a citation. She was a member of the Palmer High School Girls State Championship Basketball, plus the fact that she was also chosen as one of the all-star team members. So the first close-up student from Palmer this morning I'd like to introduce is Erica Corden. Then my other close-up students are Julie Brown, Laura McCole. Oh, there she is. Okay. Ingra DeClaire. She's on the other side, too. Okay. And Christy Wright. There she is. Thank you.
Paul Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have an additional student from the Kenai Peninsula from the English Bay Area who's with Close Up, Becky Kwasnikoff.
Senator Arlis Tertulski.
I'm not sure whether he was able to get in the gallery, but was to be here. Ted Smith, former representative and constituent of Senator DeVries, and good senator.
Is he there? Senator Dick Eliason?
Mr. President, Senator Ziegler did not miss this person from Ketchikan. She wasn't in the gallery at that particular time, but it would give me a great deal of pleasure to do this for the mayor, for the senator from Ketchikan. This young lady, I feel like she's one of my family because she grew up with my children. This is many years ago in Sitka. She's now a councilwoman in Ketchikan, Georgia Scanna.
Senator Bob Ziegler?
I don't know why my group can't get more organized. With Georgia is Kate Kroll, a assemblyman from home.
I've only got one question. Who's home watching the store?
You stand at ease, Mr.
President. To order. Senator Jack Cargo.
Mr. President, in the gallery on the far side are three lovely ladies from the Delta area that are here with the Homemakers of America, Future Homemakers of America program, and I'd like to introduce Michelle Woodbury, Becky Jensen, and Eileen Jurgensen. Welcome to the Senate.
Fred Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. Under introduction of guests, we have the teacher that is accompanying the student from Leavelock that's also with us here. I'd like to introduce her at this time, Anne-Marie Keep Barnes.
Messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor today, Mr. President.
Messages from the House?
Messages of February 7. The House passed and returned committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution number 29, Hess amended, relating to designating February 1986 as Community College Month. This has been sent to enrolling. The House passed and transmitted for consideration sponsor substitute for House Bill number 20 by Representatives Gall, Sund, Maru, Gloomberg, Taylor, Davis, and Hurley. An act relating to interest on deposits collected by public utilities.
Labor, Commerce, Finance.
Those are the messages from the House.
Any communications?
February 5, from Charles M. Northrup, Executive Director, Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, enclosing the 1986 edition of the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission's long-range plan. This has been distributed to all senators. A packet from the Department of Fish and Game with regulatory proposals on the Alaska Board of Fisheries, which will be posted. From the Treasury Division, Public Employees Retirement System, Futures Employment Retirement System, and General and Segregated Funds Monthly Financial Reports, dated October 31, 1985. From the Alaska Power Authority, in accordance with AS 4456030, Alaska Electric Power Statistics 1960 to 1984, the 10th edition, dated December 1985. And from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation of Public Trust Investing for Alaska's Future, a monthly financial report, December 1985. These will be on file in the Senate Secretary's office.
Reports to standing committees.
The State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill number 252, S.A., State Retirement Benefits, and recommends it be replaced with a Senate committee substitute and do pass. Senator Abood, Chairman, signed no recommendation. The majority do pass were signed by Senators DeVries, Vic Fisher, and Ray. CSHB 252, State Affairs, has a further referral to Finance. The Transportation Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill 111, Transportation Amended, Service Roads and Trails, recommends to be replaced with a Senate committee substitute attached to zero fiscal note. Senator Coghill, Chairman, and Senators Fakes and Paul Fisher signed do pass. CSHB 111, Transportation Amended, has no further referral.
Rules.
The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill number 204, Contracts for Architectural, Engineering, and Land Surveying Services, recommends calendar February 10. Signed, Senator Kelly, Chairman, concurring Senators Fakes and Coghill. This is on today's calendar. That's the end of the standing committee reports.
Reports to special committees?
We have no special committee reports.
The new resolutions?
We have no new resolutions.
The new bills for introduction?
Senate Bill number 392 by Senator Josephson, an act relating to periodic payments for future damages in certain civil actions, amending Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure 49 and 58, and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Judiciary, Finance.
Senate Bill number 393 by the Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, with a zero fiscal note, entitled An Act Approving the Sale of Kupik River Unit Royalty Oil by the State of Alaska to PetroStar Incorporated and Chevron USA Incorporated, and providing for an effective date.
Resources, Finance.
Senate Bill number 394 by the Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, an act relating to tax assessment and collection procedures for the electric and telephone cooperative tax.
Finance.
Those are the new bills.
This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the Secretary please read the first item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill number 204 by Senators Sturgiolowski and Rohde, an act relating to contracts for architectural, engineering, and land surveying services, and providing for an effective date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered this bill, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute CNRA. Signed, Senator DeVries, Chairman, concurring Senators Sturgiolowski, Coghill, and Ferguson. The Labor and Commerce Committee waived referral. The Finance Committee considered this bill, recommends to be replaced with a committee substitute Finance, attached to zero fiscal notes. Senator Fakes, co-chairman, and Senators Hofford, Paul Fisher, Eliason, and Ferguson signed do pass. Senator Sackett signed no recommendation. There are two committee substitutes.
Senator Sturgiolowski.
Move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of committee substitute for Senate Bill 204, Finance.
Hearing no objection, Finance Committee substitute has been adopted.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 204, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to contracts for architectural, engineering, and land surveying services, and providing for an effective date.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Halford.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 204 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before us in third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 204, Finance, an act relating to contracts for architectural, engineering, and land surveying services, and providing for an effective date.
Any questions? Any discussion? Senator Curtillo.
The fact is that the format of this legislation is approximately that now of the Department of Transportation and state agencies, and it works, but I don't think that is probably precisely good public policy to state that in the body of our legislation, and presumably that which now does direct architects and engineers. As you know, we don't bid, we make proposals, and professions in this field aren't necessarily awarded bids on the basis of the lowest bid or the lowest possible cost of services. This area is subject to multiple abuses. Note in the legislation, notwithstanding the provisions of this section, the state agency may include price as a factor under certain conditions, may include price. Seems to me that even if we don't speak to it at this time, and this is the system now currently used, that we ought to start thinking about factoring in, and it would take committee effort, a lot of committee effort, but factoring in price and a whole lot of different programs, the competence of the group, and so on, all as factors of and ingredients of the final bid decision, rather than price being perhaps the least of them. I think that based on our other types of contracts in which price is the total ingredient, the low bid, that there is a place in dealing with the professions, history notwithstanding of them, that price ought to be a factor in considering. And the low bid ought to be a factor in considering architectural and engineering standards, particularly with the firms that do have insurance, et cetera, to protect the public interest. I just don't like the concept that both the engineers, architects, land surveyors have used historically in this nation. It works, but it could be improved upon, and that's the reason that I rose today. It's not a popular position to be in, I suspect.
Senator Wright.
Mr. President, just to call attention of the Secretary to page 2, line 6. I believe that there's probably a typo here. The word of should have come out of there, I believe. The third will be the fourth, probably the fourth word of. So it would read, if negotiations with the most qualified and suitable firm or person under this section, instead of under it. Of this section. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to just take up out of there.
We're not checking for that kind of statement.
It's a typo, I think, is probably what it means.
Senator Hope.
I think, Mr. President, that the problem is the typo in the parentheses. There should be an A, so it would read under A of this section. The A is the provision that it refers back to, the immediately preceding provision.
That's right.
Correct that. Senator Curtillo.
Further, the state desires from time to time to have a uniformity of buildings sort of on the shelf. And under the arrangements between the professionals and the state, each and every building, regardless of its identity or regardless of whether it is identical to the next, must each and every one have a sign-off, must each and every one be prepared by the architect. And, you know, we've been talking for years about having on-the-shelf design of certain types of structures that only the foundations then in the region, winds and so on, need to be considered. And if they're designed to the most stringent of those considerations, they'll fit practically any place in the state. Admittedly, there's a swamp and so on to be considered. We get no consideration out of the professionals in this regard either. So I think there's an area in time to come, somebody on this floor, and perhaps myself, that someone ought to get together and redesign this whole program of professions and their dealings with the state of Alaska.
You ready for the question?
Question.
The question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 204 Finance pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? The secretary will lock the roll. any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote.
Roll shows 19 yeas, 1 nay.
Senator Halpert?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the final passage of the Finance Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 204 be considered the roll call of the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. So, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 204 Finance has passed the Senate with the effective date clause. Senator Burks?
May we revert to the introduction of guests?
Without objection, Senator, introduction of guests.
I have a friend and a longtime resident of Nome here in the gallery. Excuse me, Mr. Cook from Nome.
Will the Secretary please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 69, Judiciary, an act relating to licensing and regulation of the sale and distribution of alcoholic beverages and providing for an effective date, which was held from last week. I do have an amendment number 1 by Senator Rohde. On page 5, lines 3 through 15, delete. Renumber sections accordingly. On page 6, on line 5, delete 12, insert 11.
General.
Mr. President, every member should have the amendment on his or her desk. I believe the amendment is self-explanatory. It deletes that section which to which the various parties were trying to agree. Apparently that isn't possible. It is best to delete that section in its entirety and have the bill move on because the other provisions are important. I would move amendment number 1 and ask unanimous consent, Mr. President.
Senator Sackett.
Just a question, Senator Rohde, through the chair. What would the effect be in terms of it going back to the existing law and whether or not the existing law has any problems before at the present time? It doesn't have any problems.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, in response to Senator Sackett's question, the existing law provides that it is an offense for a person who sells intoxicating beverages to allow an intoxicated person to stay on the premises. The argument on this floor, of course, was that modifications are needed in that to ensure that people aren't pushed into their automobiles, and it was a public policy question. It is admittedly a difficult question, and we were unable to solve that in the short time we had, and that is the reason for this amendment, Senator.
One more question. Are there any existing problems with the law right now with regard to villages and the radius problems around them? And was your proposed bill attempting to take care of any
of them? Senator
Rohde? Mr. President, in response to Senator Sackett, that language was proposed by the board. It is a standard definition of a village area, and there wasn't one in the law, and that is the reason that it's there.
Thank you. Senator Ray?
Well, I think that we must understand you have to close these bars sometimes, so if you're going to close them sometime, you're going to have to force those people out in the cars that are not in the cold anyway. All right?
Ray, no objection. The amendment is adopted. Are there further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
Senator Halpert?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 69 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before us in third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
CS for Senate Bill Number 69, Judiciary Amended, an act relating to licensing and regulation of the sale and distribution of alcoholic beverages and providing for an effective date.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 69, Judiciary Amended, pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? The Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, record the vote.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Senator Halpert?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and final passage of the Judiciary Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 69 amended be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, effective date clause is adopted. So committee substitute for Senate Bill 69 Judiciary amended and passed the Senate with the effective date clauses. The Secretary, please read the citation calendar.
Citation honoring Palmer Moose Girls basketball team by Representatives Larson, Hurley, Navarre, and Szymanski, and Senators Curtula, DeVries, and Paul Fisher. A citation honoring Bartlett High School basketball team by Senators Josephson, Kelly, Hawford, and Vic Fisher, Representative Porchot. In memoriam, Challenger astronauts by Representatives Maru, Navarre, Collins, and Boucher, and Senators Vic Fisher, Kelly, Paul Fisher, Lodi, Bennett, Bates, Hawford, DeVries, and Sturdzielewski.
Senator Bill Ray.
I would move that the Challenger astronaut citation be by all members of the Senate and all members be listed as individually.
Hearing no objection. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent. Citation calendar be approved.
Hearing no objection, the citation calendar has been adopted. Brings us to the end of today's calendar. Is there any unfinished business? Senator Sturdzielewski?
Yes, move and ask unanimous consent with the consent of the sponsor to be added as a co-sponsor to Senate Bill number 390, an act establishing additional marine parks, and Senate concurrent resolution number 32 relating to the bicentenary of the United States Constitution.
Hearing no objection. Senator Rohde?
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the five-day rule be waived on Senate Bill 330. This is an act relating to veterinary medicine. It is sponsored by Senator Fakes. It's the Good Samaritan bill for veterinarians.
Hearing no objection.
Mr. President.
Senator Fred Zoroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused, not subject to a call from February 12th through the 14th for state business until plain time on the 17th.
Hearing no objection.
President.
Senator Tim Keller.
Could we have a brief at ease, please?
Stand at ease. Call the Senate back to order. We're under unfinished business. Senator Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. And the Senate Bill 394, which was introduced today, had a finance referral. I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 394, which is an act relating to tax assessment and collection procedures for the electrical and telephone cooperatives tax, be referred also to the Labor and Commerce Committee.
Without objection. Brings us to announcement of committee meetings. Senator Sturdzielewski?
Yes, Senate Resources today, 130 Butrovich Room. We'll have SB 309, an act relating to royalty value of natural gas lease on state land. SB 276, relating to lease sale and disposal of natural gas for public use. There will be no meeting of Senate Resources on Wednesday this week, as committee will be in Anchorage for the Resource Development Council conference. We're going to have on Friday in Anchorage, and joined here by members of the committee by teleconference. From 9 until noon, we're going to have an overview on mining, including Red Dog, at the Anchorage Legislative Information Office. This will be teleconference to Juneau, Fairbanks, Barrow, and Kotzebue. And that meeting will start at 9 a.m. on Friday. Thank you.
Senator Fakes.
President, the Finance Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 8:30, taking up SJR 32, requesting the government of the United States to reassert jurisdiction over Wrangell Island, Herald Island, Henrietta, Jeanette, and Bennett, up there on the Continental Shelf in the Chukchi Sea. House Bill 118, an act relating to small claims and duties of magistrates and providing for an effective date, and then all the permanent fund legislation, and there are six of them, are up before the committee if the committee wishes to ask any questions or do those bills. Then on Wednesday morning at 8:30, the capital projects currently authorized for fish and game, health and social services, revenue and community and regional affairs will be discussed in finance. And tomorrow at 3:30 in Senate Finance, the subcommittee on the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities will have their meeting with the officer of the commissioner and statewide programs up for budget hearings.
Okay. Senator Cargo.
Mr. President, at 3:30 this afternoon in the Butrovich Room, while we will be holding the Senate Transportation Committee, we've got a very interesting overview and review of the Alaska Railroads Task Force with DOTPF on railroad crossings and the policies of railroad crossings. And then we're going to take up Senate Bill 240 relating to overtaking and passing of school buses.
3:30, Petrovich Room.
Senator Farenkamp.
Mr. President, tomorrow at 1:30 in the Belts Room, Hess will be teleconferencing to all sides SB 251 relating to the practice of psychology. And as a committee substitute for House Bill 172, Judiciary, it's relating to the rights of the physically and mentally disabled persons. Then on Thursday at 1:30 in the Belts, and teleconference to Anchorage for the benefit of those members of the committee who will be in Anchorage. We'll have a briefing by the Criminal Justice Working Group on anticipated growth in the state's prison inmate population. And I'd really appreciate if those who are going to be in Anchorage for the resources activities there that are on Hess Committee could make it at 1:30 for teleconference.
Senator Cotullo.
There is a subcommittee budget on community regional affairs and overview with Commissioner Noddy today at 2:30 at the Franklin Street building.
Senator Tim Keller.
Mr. President, there will be a Rules Committee meeting today at 1 o'clock for the purpose of calendaring bills.
Senator Sorrell.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Labor and Commerce Committee will meet today at 3:30 in the Belts Room, and the bills have been posted. And in conjunction with the meetings in Anchorage on Friday afternoon from 1:30 to 3, the Labor and Commerce Committee will be holding a public hearing regarding the local hire issue.
Is there any special orders? Senator Bates?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent for the privilege of the floor under special orders to discuss oil pricing.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just for some historical background for the body and for the information of the public, just go over a little bit of the historical significance and some of the historical data of oil pricing and oil forecasting through the years. Before 1969, oil was relatively stable. There was a blurp and a high oil prices in the 1920s, but basically from 1920 up to 1969, oil was very, very steady, between 50 cents a barrel to $1.25 a barrel, not any real big deal. Between 1969 and October 1st of 1973, the price of oil went from $1.80 a barrel to $3 a barrel. So that was the first relatively new modern blip on the screen. And then in 1973, for the first 3 months, oil went from $3 a barrel to $12 a barrel in 3 months. That's called the first OPEC shock. So in 3 months' time, oil quadrupled. And then it stayed relatively flat, bouncing around in the $12, $13 category until the second shock hit the world in 1979-1980. Prices reached a stabilizing amount of $30 a barrel. There were oil on the market as high as $34 to $38 a barrel. And this was caused primarily because of the revolution in Iran. 5 million barrels of oil a day ceased to be on the world market, and OPEC was really in control of the supply. From 1980 to 1982, this is a period of time where OPEC is really in the driver's seat. They control half the world's market of oil. They've got the extensive reserves, and they're controlling the swing amount between supply and demand on the world market. There were forecasters in the 1980-82 realm, including the state of Alaska, that was predicting the price of oil would be $50 to $55 a barrel by 1990. And I wish I had been in the legislature then, but I wasn't, but many of you were. And that's when the state of Alaska was getting exceptionally high prices for their oil, and things looked absolutely rosy, and many of you voted to put extra amounts of money in the permanent fund. About 18 months ago, Saudi Arabia announced to their fellow OPEC members in a regular OPEC meeting that unless they all pulled together and started adhering to production quotas and started adhering to price quotas, that they would take appropriate action. So this was the beginning of their threats. The first time that Saudi Arabia said, hey, we don't like what you folks are doing. And with the agreement of OPEC, they hired a Danish accounting firm to check everybody's production and to see what they were selling oil for. 12 months ago, Saudi put their second threat out to their fellows, and the Dutch CPAs concluded that, yes, everybody was cheating except for Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. No one else was adhering to production quotas, and everyone else was cheating on price. And Saudi Arabia said, if you folks don't quit this immediately, we are going to go to net back pricing agreements. Well, nobody stopped cheating. And 6 months ago, Saudi has put into effect exactly that. They've done two things. They've started net back agreements, which means that they are guaranteeing the producers or the oil companies a set profit per barrel of oil on the oil that's coming out of Saudi Arabia. So a certain percentage or a set amount per barrel is guaranteed profit. And that's a real change in policy. Also, Saudi Arabia was producing 6 months ago 2 million barrels of oil a day for world consumption. And now the best estimates are they're between 5 and 6 million barrels a day. Some people say 7 million barrels a day. But generally, it's between 5 and 6 million barrels a day. Now, why are they doing this? Because that added supply of oil on the market has caused the price of oil to go down. And there are many factors that go into making the price of oil, what these forecasters do, the gurus I call them. They look at the economic conditions of the world. What's going on out there? How much manufacturing is being done? What kind of economic situations are going on in a country to produce growth or stabilization? What's the energy demand for that growth? That's one of the factors, the energy demand. Of that energy demand, how much is going to be oil demand? So the third factor that goes into these forecasting is oil demand. If you've got X amount that has to be for oil demand, how much of this energy is going to be supplied by non-oil? The syn fuels, the natural gas, the coal supply, all of those things get cranked into these formulas. Then when you look at oil demand, you have to balance two factors. How much is controlled by OPEC, and how much is controlled by non-OPEC? And, of course, Alaskan oil, North Sea oil, Mexico oil is all the non-OPEC oil that's on the market now that wasn't on the market in the early 70s. And then you balance all of these factors out, and that's when they come up with this magic thing called the oil price or the forecasted price for oil. Now, what the forecasters are saying is there's three primary theories out there for why Saudi Arabia has gone to net backing and why they are driving the price of oil down. The first one, of course, is I think the most obvious. They want to bring their fellow OPEC members in line. They want to bring Great Britain and Norway, the two primary countries controlling the North Sea production, and they want to bring them in line to reform an OPEC or reform a new oil-producing cartel to control production and controls price. And they feel that this then will maintain the price at a higher level if production is controlled. So that's one of the theories for why Saudi is doing this. And there has been some movement in this effect. Norway 1 week says, hey, we're willing to talk to OPEC. Margaret Thatcher on the other point is saying, no way, we're going to allow the marketplace to create the price of oil here and let supply and demand take over. The second theory is that Saudis are driving down the price in order to increase consumption. Because when the price went from $12 to $38 in 1979-80, that's when all the consumer, the conservation issues took over. And everybody started driving smaller cars. And everybody started using less oil. And everybody started going to look for natural gas. Natural gas was decontrolled in the United States. There was syn fuel development. All of this technological development to use and find energy sources other than oil went into place. And they want, because they're sitting on a 300-year supply of oil, they want to get the demand for oil back up there. They want to eliminate those conservation methods. They want us to go back to driving big cars. So in order to get more consumption of oil on the market, higher demand, therefore raising the price. The third theory, and this is the last one, and I'll hush in a minute, is the Saudis are driving down the price in order to get their share of the market. They've given up on their fellow OPEC members. They know that North Sea oil is relatively expensive to produce. So if they can drive the price down low enough so that they can get their share of the market that they need in order to work their government expenditures in their country, then they'll be happy. And let me give you some for-ifs on this thing. Saudi Arabia 6 months ago was pumping 2 million barrels of oil a day at $27 a barrel. They were bringing in $54 million a day. Okay. Today, they're pumping between 5 and 6 million barrels of oil at about $20 a barrel, and you all can multiply as well as I can, $100 to $120 million a day, they have now increased their net worth or their cash flow. So they've almost doubled their cash flow, or have doubled their cash flow, by tripling their production. But let's say oil falls to $10 a barrel. If Saudi continues to pump 5 or 6 million barrels a day at $10, they're still making $50 to $60 million dollars a day. So Saudi, with a 13 million barrel a day capacity, is in the driver's seat with their own future. I mean, they can decide, are they going to go for a market share, or are they going to encourage their comrades to play the game and cut production and keep the price up? Now, we talked to some, we had 16 oil analysts, as you all know, come and talk to us in the last 12 months. We've talked to several of them in the last couple of days, and basically they're all over the board. They're afraid to make a prediction. We're in a highly volatile time frame. We have one forecaster say that oil will drop to $10 a barrel because that's the good floor. That's when Alaska North Slope oil and North Sea oil becomes iffy, and that $10 a barrel will be a good floor. We have Joe Stanislaw from Harvard, who works in Paris, saying that it will settle out in the long term at about $21 a barrel. That's for Saudi Light or West Texas Intermediate. And but for the first 6 to 12 months of 1986, we're going to have a lot of volatility, a lot of erratic numbers, and that we should be very, very cautious. And then the other forecasters are somewhere in between, 10 or 21. You pick the number. So with that, I just wanted everyone to know we are watching it closely. Oil has firmed up over the last 3 days. Alaska North Slope crude is in the $17 range today. So I think the best advice is to watch it, but it's going to be volatile. We're in the 10 to 21, a high of 21, a low of 10 for oil that's a little bit more valuable than ANS. And I think we're in for some rough times. At least our revenue projections for 1987 are going to be real difficult to try to pinpoint.
Senator Sackett.
Mr. President,
as everyone knows, approximately 80 to 85% of the revenues that we have that comes to the state of Alaska's coffers come from oil revenues. And so every fluctuation that you have, of course, coming up is going to affect the amount of money that we have available for expenditure. And what I'd like to go over right now with the members is just some information to provide you with the parameters and some ideas as to where we are. And I don't want anyone to get the impression that the sky is falling in, but I do definitely want everyone to be aware of exactly what the effects of what Senator Fakes has indicated is happening on the world market. We started at the beginning of this year with available dollars of $2.698.9 billion. The governor came in with an operating budget of $1.965 billion. In addition to that, with oil and gas litigation as a separate item, geo bond debts, school debts at $106 million, then adding on monies for supplementals, $10 million for new legislation, $63 million for loans, and the $348.2 million for the capital budget that the governor recommended. Basically, there was $44.1 million left on the table. That was the proposal that came down from the governor last month. That was based upon the revenue projections that they had come to up through December. And it did not include all of the fluctuations that we've heard, not only from the people that Senator Fakes has talked to in New York and elsewhere, but also from Vince Wright at the Department of Revenue, who we met with last week. As you know, in addition to that, there are a number of other pots of money, as we call them, that are available. And you could take the balance, for example, the 41 that would be left over, that would still be available, $298 million from the rainy day account, the ARCO settlement of $243 million, TAPS of 336.1, the recent Ohio settlement of 168 million. And we've always had in there this 8G settlement of 56 million. And on Friday and again today, I called John Katz back in Washington to find out more about this, and have since learned that that potential money is not really there. We knew it was not available yet, but the possibility of it coming into reality is not that great. He gives it a 50-50 chance. Congress right now has adjourned for 10 days. The governor, the president would like to veto the legislation entirely, the settlement. They're attempting to put it into a budget reconciliation bill at the present time, and we probably won't know until about the 1st of March the possibilities of receiving that $56 million. So what I've done, just to give an idea of where we are, is to, at this point, eliminate that potential $56 million because it just isn't there as a guarantee. Taking two scenarios and using the feelings and discussions that we got from various people and talking about what's going to happen for FY87 in terms of revenues, we took the figure of an additional loss of $700 million over and above what is being projected right now for revenue. With that in mind, that eliminates any addition to the school debt service, which is approximately $55 million by the time you include Sitka, Kodiak, etc. That eliminates any addition to the new foundation formula, and we've estimated that at 14.3. That does not include any funds for any salary increases, both for covered or uncovered. We had discussed in Finance Committee about possibly reducing the operating budget by 2.5%, just starting at that amount, which, by the way, just for your information, just the municipal assistant revenue sharing would be $3.2 million going to the communities, and in the foundation formula alone would mean $16.8 million. And we were talking about making just that minor reduction in that, so people can get a feeling now as to what 2.5% a reduction in the operating budget means. It means 16.8 million reduction in your foundation program, just alone in that one area. It eliminates any possibility of any legislative add-on to the capital budget, whether you're talking $100 to $200 million an add-on. There would be no possibility of that. It eliminates totally the governor's proposed buffer zone legislation. That, again, I remind you, is with an estimated shortfall of $700 million. If you had, and the only other thing I want to mention, that did not touch any of the permanent fund undistributed monies at all. And at the present time, the annual report had $763.3 million. It's estimated by 7/1 of 86, that'll be another additional $250 million there. And so, again, you know, any person can use any figure they want, but I was trying to just use a balanced figure, something that I thought would be reasonable. And I just took the theory that it appeared that the public did not want the legislature to use any of the permanent fund and distributed monies at all, and so I eliminated that totally. If $700 million is too much in people's minds, that would have to be reduced, and we won't know this until April. Even if you took a $400 million reduction, that still leaves you a deficit of $30.3 million. So we're in a situation now where we're tied very, very closely to what's happening on the international market. And as the days go by, we'll get a better feeling as to what's going to happen. But I think everyone feels or realizes that there are going to be reductions made in the projected revenues for FY87. And people talk about short-term reductions, and that is short-term. It's for the whole year. Long-term, they talk about 3 to 5 years. And so for FY87, maybe for FY88, we can expect to see reductions made in revenue, and as a consequence, we have to reevaluate everything that we've done to date, not only looking at the existing programs, but realizing that many of the new proposed programs that both we and the administration have been proposing may not come into reality. As the days go by, I think both Senator Fakes and I will attempt to provide more information as we get it.
Thank you, John. Senator Sturgis?
Yes, I'd move and ask unanimous consent to address the floor very briefly on the same subject.
Hearing no objection.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. President. I want to compliment Senator Sackett and Senator Fakes for bringing this issue up. I think it's really important to communicate with the public on it. It's potentially going to cause some very major reductions in the operating budget, and I think that it's an issue when we're talking about utilizing some of those special non-recurring funds for today's budget needs, that it takes a lot of public debate as well as certainly on discussion on the part of the legislature. But, you know, last year we had a similar situation, and the whole burden was left to the legislative body to make adjustments in the budget. I think it's incumbent and an obligation of the administration to prepare a contingency budget for resubmission to the legislature on this whole issue as to how they would see. They put in a good number of money bills on the budget buffer approach and so on. And to this date, we've seen really no action at all on the part of the administration as to how we might be handling this very serious budgetary matter that appears to be coming. So with that, I compliment the co-chair of the finance. I think they've done a good job and a good public service, and I hope they'll continue to make this information available.
Senator Ray?
I'm privileged to the floor on the same subject, Mr. President.
Hearing no objection?
I don't find any fault. I guess you can compliment the budget people on their what they're doing. That's their job, and it's one that a lot of us have had previous to them. I would just think that they could also possibly look at the $256 million for Sioux City, and that might be a chunk that they would like to have to put in the operating budget rather than put it away and fritter it away on FERC. Also, I think that perhaps they might, if there was some way that they could take a public poll, as to find out. See, the people of Alaska don't know. The average person out in the street does not know the terrible financial difficulty the state is in. Temporarily, as far as the cash flow is concerned. I don't mean we're broke or anything like that, but those people out there do not know, and we're just surmising because we know or we have an idea that we're being shorted on funds, but nobody really knows out there exactly what it is. And if there was maybe we'll have to give them a public information, some way to do it. I don't know how, but maybe we can sit down and figure it out. So they would not object to us using some of the income, not the permanent fund itself, but the income off the permanent fund as a temporary stopgap. I mean, just to say offhand, people don't want to suspend it. No, because they don't realize exactly what would happen. I think they would rather we used maybe some of the income off of that rather than to cut down municipal funding or help for schools. That's just a thought.
Senator Ferencamp?
Mr. President, permission to address the floor on the same subject.
Without objection?
Mr. President, I could not sit here and listen as a representative of the Interior to the suggestion that the $256 million that has been thought about for many years as a way to try to find a solution to the energy problems within the Interior be so casually put back into another fund or spent for operations. Those areas throughout the state who have been having the support of all of the state's legislators in trying to solve their energy problems should not forget that the energy problems of the Interior have not been addressed, have not been corrected. And with that in mind, I'd like to appeal to this body to please remember that we are still paying the highest school rates in our area. We have very high energy costs. And it would behoove us to remember that support from one district is should not be forgotten when it comes to trying to help solve the problems of that area in their energy problems, because they have not gone away. We have our MUS plant that has been or is under the process of being condemned by DEC because of the air quality standards. We have the university power plant that's in the same boat. And with those things in mind, I just want to bring them to your attention at this time.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, tomorrow we'll be meeting at 10 a.m. in the House chambers to start the joint session with Senator Murkowski. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent the Senate stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. in the House chambers.